Our next case, 12-681, Disciplinary Counsel versus Stephen J. Edwards. Later, Ms. Costa.
May it please the court, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, Carol Costa on behalf of Disciplinary Counsel. Today we're asking the court to do two things. First, to find under the facts and circumstances of this case that respondents' actions were dishonest and therefore a violation of Professional Conduct Rule 8.4C. Second, we're asking the court to find under the facts and circumstances of this case that respondents' conduct warrants actual time off, that being a one-year suspension with 6 months stayed.
Counsel, it seems to me the key distinction here is that this is a case that has a great deal of mitigation, but you're pretty much saying that any time this type of misappropriation occurs, it should be an automatic timeout, that mitigation is not sufficient to mitigate the act that was committed.
In this case, there is a lot of mitigation, Your Honor, no question about it. And we took that into consideration when we made the recommendation to the panel of 1 year with six stayed. Because obviously, as the court is aware, you start with disbarment in misappropriation cases. And there have been cases involving IOLTA matters where the court has stayed the suspension. And those cases are distinguishable in the amount, the length of time, the knowledge or intent of the respondent, the severity of any mental health issues. And also a lot of those cases deal with commingling. Either a respondent was sloppy taking care of his IOLTA, lazy about it, didn't understand. Sometimes they just don't get it. But that wasn't the case here. This respondent was very well aware of how to manage an IOLTA. He knew that this money wasn't his. He knew he had an obligation to safeguard that money. He knew it would be wrong to take it. Yet he did take it for a period of about 1.5 years, over 10 different transactions.
Did he self-report this?
Yes and no, Your Honor. We got a notice for an overdraft from the bank. It was just under $900. And after we sent out our standard letter of inquiry, he reported through his counsel that he had misappropriated these funds.
So it's like so many others, when the representation is self-reporting, once the trigger has been pulled, by the banks, based on their statutory responsibilities, then they come forward.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, we took all of the mitigation factors into consideration when making our recommendation.
And there'd been full restitution, more than $60,000.
It's all been paid back, Your Honor. Respondent paid back $17,000 on his own in December of 2009. Then after I sent out the letter of inquiry regarding the overdraft on November 3rd of 2010, he then made two additional payments in November and December of that year. And there were no complaints from clients. There were no complaints from the subrogated carrier or providers. We acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But we're talking $70,000
yes.
over a period of a year and a half. And while the court has said all this morning, you have to look at the specific facts of the case. You also have to keep an eye as to what you're writing for people to look at in the future. And while the respondent in this case presented very well, and I don't doubt he was remorseful and he had problems, the fact of the matter was he had a fiduciary duty. He breached it. He knew he was doing it at the time. And that warrants a finding of dishonesty. I don't know how you find taking someone else's money isn't dishonest. And some actual time off.
But there was cooperation?
Full cooperation with my office throughout once the matter was reported. Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. And the board recommended? 2 years, two-year probation stayed.
Stayed. The panel recommended one stayed. The board recommended two.
Two. And you're seeking this morning?
1 year with 6 months.
6 months stayed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you know, sorry. I was just trying to figure out, how did the panel come to the conclusion that these were not fraud, misrepresentation?
They really don't say anything, Your Honor. I mean, I can understand fraud, misrepresentation, nothing was said about anything, but dishonesty is what I'm looking at.
Okay.
And I just realized, Your Honor, I failed to ask for to save a couple of minutes for rebuttal, if I could, please. Thank you.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'd like to discuss this morning why, based on the particular facts of this case and the law of Ohio, why Mr. Edwards should not receive an actual suspension from the practice of law. And I'd also like to discuss why the sanction recommended by the board will do more to protect the public, which is the purpose of the disciplinary system, than the sanction suggested and recommended by the disciplinary council. So that there is no ambiguity and no mistake, I do want to briefly again state, Mr. Edwards misappropriated this money. He has taken full, total, and complete responsibility. He is embarrassed, he is humiliated, he is ashamed, and he has stipulated to two violations. The 1.15 violation, which is keeping money segregated between that of the lawyer and that of the client, and the 8.4H, conduct adversely reflecting on a lawyer's ability to practice law.
And why is this not also dishonest?
The essence, Your Honor, of this case is a 1.15 violation. In any legal ethics case, an improper advertising case, if improper advertising goes on for a period of time and it's not promptly reported, we can say, well, that's dishonest. If there's a conflict of interest and it goes on for a period of time and the lawyer doesn't self-report that immediately, we can say that's dishonest. In this case, Mr. Edwards did misappropriate the money, but when he received a letter about an $2 overdraft of an IOLTA on a $2,500 check, he did not, and this is where I would respectfully disagree with my colleague, he did not simply respond to that $800-and-some-dollar overdraft based on a $2,500 check. He came forward and he said, I need to tell you about everything. And once he did that, he was open, honest, and candid, and cooperative. And so in response to your question, Your Honor, openness, honesty, candor are not the hallmarks of dishonesty, as that term is used in 8.4. If we're not careful, all ethics violations that are not immediately self-reported can be 8.4C dishonest violations. And I don't.
But when you look at the act, not how he responded when he either got caught or self-reported, as you might want to characterize it, when you look at the act, he is taking money that is not his and using it for his own purposes, and the act itself. I'm having trouble understanding why the act itself does not become dishonest.
He did take money that was not his. He did use it for his own purposes, but that is no more dishonest than violating most of the rules of ethics, of which there are many, and then not immediately self-reporting. The essence of this case is it's a 1.15 violation. 1.15A. And that's really the essence of what he did wrong. It's
well,
not.
In paragraph 22, here the respondent's misappropriation is more in line with those cases where there is an absence of improper motive or deceit. I can't imagine this not having an improper motive or deceit in taking the money, $70,000, to give to his wife to, you know, sustain her business, knowing it's not his money, just as Justice Stratton spoke of. That, to me, is inconsistent.
He certainly acted with selfish motive, and we have could not argue otherwise. 8.4C.
Give me an example of how you would deceitfully take money from your IOLTA account and use it for an improper purpose.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, how you would...
How would you deceitfully do that?
Take the money and then lie to people about it. Mr. Edwards did not, well, he didn't come out and immediately self-report. He did not make any misrepresentation of any facts to anybody at any time. He told the truth once he self-reported.
Did he tell his wife, I'm, you know, robbing my IOLTA account to help you out here, honey?
I would respectfully object to the word rob because it has a criminal connotation.
I'm misappropriating money.
There's nothing in the record that would indicate that.
Okay.
I think all reasonable people would agree that what we do in these cases is we balance the aggravating and mitigating factors. And in a moment, I'd like to talk about the mitigating factors. But before I do that, in further response to the questions that have been asked, I would point out that on page 11 of our brief, we cite three cases which hold that even if there is an 8.4C fraud, dishonest, misrepresentation finding, that it does not have to result in a actual suspension from the practice of law. In addition, one of the cases cited by our colleagues at disciplinary counsel, I believe it was the Wright case. I'm sorry, that's not the case I meant to refer to. The Dayton Bar versus Guerin, G-E-R-R-E-N case, says if there are appropriate mitigating circumstances, there need not be an actual suspension. The court then said in that case, Guerin, however, we don't have those mitigating circumstances here. So even if there is an 8.4C violation, the precedent established by this court in modern cases, recent cases, has held that that does not necessarily have to result in an actual suspension. The mitigating factors in this case are substantial. As I said, when Mr. Edwards got the notice of the $892 overdraft on a $2,500 check, he did not limit his response to that. He came forward and said everything. Further, he then was honest and open and cooperative with the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, with the panel, and thereby with the board. He's made full restitution. Nobody has been harmed or will be harmed by his misconduct because of that restitution.
What is your client doing now?
He's practicing law, Your Honor.
In a firm?
He's a sole practitioner.
Okay. Is there a mentor relationship? Does he have anyone monitoring?
Yes, Your Honor. The record demonstrates that Attorney Richard Swope is a longtime, successful, knowledgeable attorney in the Columbus area who spent a considerable period of time prosecuting legal ethics cases for the Columbus Bar Association. Mr. Edwards, and this is established in the record both by the testimony of Mr. Edwards and a stipulated letter that came in from Mr. Swope, has a mentoring relationship with Mr. Swope where they meet on a regular basis, but also if a problem comes up, he has somebody he can go to. Further, in order to get to the heart of this problem, He has entered into a contract, Mr. Edwards has entered into a contract with OLAP, who has diagnosed him as having an adjustment disorder with anxiety and depression. The adjustment disorder being in the year 2005, his wife came to him and said, I want you to move out of this house and I want this marriage to end. And Mr. Edwards, quite frankly, just could not accept that, did not accept that, and kept trying to do, frankly, stupid things to put his marriage back together, at least do things he thought would put his marriage back together, and that's being addressed now. He's a person of good character and good
reputation. How many clients is he representing? Do you have any idea what the client base might be?
I do not, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I just don't have that data available. I can tell you that he's a person of good character and reputation, and I don't think there's really any dispute about the operative facts of this case. I think there is some dispute about what inferences or conclusions legally that are to be drawn.
What's the nature of his practice?
He does a lot of groundwater work.
Of what?
Groundwater, Your Honor. And he does some personal injury. And he does some general practice. He's in Grove City, Ohio. And he was born and raised in Grove City. And he's practiced there, I think, since about the time he came out of law school at Ohio State in 1979. So he's been there a long time, and he knows a lot of people, excuse me.
And there's a commitment for the next 2 years, if we were to follow the board's recommendation, that your client would continue with mental health work as well as the OLAP. Is that correct?
That is correct, and of course, he would also be required not to engage in any further misconduct during that two-year period. Under the recommendation from our colleagues at the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, it's a 12-month situation, which includes 6 months of actual suspension, as opposed to what the board recommended, which is an additional year of oversight, which I would respectfully submit contributes to protecting the public, which is the purpose of the disciplinary system.
Counsel, is your client continue to be married to this wife, or is that?
My best information on that, Your Honor, is that that is in the process of being terminated or has been terminated, but I honestly don't know the up-to-the-day status of that matter. But he clearly, everybody, I think, in the world saw that the marriage was over, except for Steve Edwards, and that's what got him into trouble. He had a totally unhealthy obsession with trying to keep his family together. He testified, I love my family, I love my wife, I love my kids, and that's a good thing, and it is a good thing, but in this case, as he testified, it was too much of a good thing. He simply would not accept the adjustment that was placed upon him. He simply did not accept the reality that his wife, if the wife says the marriage is over, it's over, or if the husband says it. And that's really, it was unwise and frankly stupid, but that's what he did, and that's what got him in this problem. And he's done everything that he's been asked to do, and it's a stipulated fact, the first stipulation, paragraph 12, he's done everything he's been asked to do to mitigate the consequences of his misconduct. And certainly, Mr. Edwards is not saying, and I'm not saying, he has not engaged in misconduct. In conclusion, we would ask that the recommendation of the board for 2 years suspension with all suspension stayed subject to conditions be accepted. And if there are no further questions, I'll simply say thank you.
Costa.
Counsel, would our case law allow us to find this action to be dishonest to preserve that characterization of behavior like this and yet still go with the board recommendation?
You are, based on case law, able to do either. Find there's dishonesty and leave it stayed, or the other way around. But, again, under the facts of this case, I think 6 months off is entirely justified. I would like to say I don't, with all due respect, quite understand the distinction, because this is a quote-unquote self-report and therefore not dishonest. They're not the same thing. If Mr. Edwards had called my office out of the blue and said, here's what I did, I took this money, I still would have charged him with this violation of dishonesty. It is, in fact, the act. You've seen case after case after case where respondents self-report a felony conviction. They called up. They didn't lie. But
what I got
charge them.
The distinction here is that once he was caught, he didn't lie about it. And they're not arguing that it was dishonest to take that money out of an account that he shouldn't have been touching for anything other than its intended purposes. But there's an emphasis on the fact that he didn't lie to anybody about once he, you know, had to fess up. There was no cover-up or lies. And I don't know that I would, observe that as being an act to, mitigate or dissolve the label of dishonesty.
I agree, Your Honor. That not lying to anybody about it goes to mitigation. The act itself of taking somebody else's property for your own is dishonest. There's a difference between the two. Again, under the circumstances here, while we recognize that this respondent had a lot of problems and had a lot of mitigation, he knew what he was doing. He knew it was wrong. It's a considerable amount of money over a considerable period of time. And the court has said time and time again that misappropriation is one of the most serious cases. We took all of this into account.
Counsel, in reading the panel's analysis of which way to go, time out or not, I didn't think they were saying it wasn't dishonest. I thought they were saying, here's a subset of cases where timeout was required or recommended by the board, and here's another subset where it was not. And we think, all things considered, we should come on the side of not taking timeout. I don't think they suggested that it wasn't dishonesty.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because they didn't find the 8.4C violation, which is fraud, dishonest, misrepresentation. Because if they had said this is dishonest, but these cases are different, that would go to the mitigation. So you start with what the act is, what the violations are. Then you look at all of the mitigating factors to cut the sanction down from disbarment to whatever is appropriate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. All right. We're concluded.